This call is being recorded.
Talking to my people, yeah.
You gotta take a look at yourself, yeah. with your life. Running like a red disease. Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself. Yeah, ghetto people. Ghetto people.
Motherland Media is on the air. You are listening to African Perspectives on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. African Perspectives, where we talk about the issues of our day from an African worldview, an African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak. Having been granted permission, to our ancestors whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters and friends, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. So I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is always an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who is living, and everyone who will live in the future. We have a common ancestral root. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were other cultures as well, such as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe, great civilizations that were flourishing while Europe was still in a medieval or dark age. So we pour this libation to those contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, uprooted out of Africa, laying a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. They are now in North America, Central America, South America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to brothers and sisters who suffered the Holocaust of enslavement, of captivity. We do not know their names, but because of them, we are here. So we honor them and their sacrifice. We say Ashe. We pour libation to those men and women who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you'll know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a slave want to do? It wants to get free. There's over 400 recorded revolts of our people fighting on the continent, throughout the Middle Passage, and this hemisphere. We resisted. We were not slaves. A slave is somebody or something that submits its will to a master, and we haven't and we will never submit. So we give honor and reverence to those men and women who fought. Denmark Vesey, Gabriel Prosser, Harriet Tubman, Nat Turner, and many, many others. We honor them We respect them for always standing and fighting for the liberation of our people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good community life because we don't have good family life. Conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is bad because we lack consciousness. Consciousness is more than just awareness. It's a deeper understanding of who you are culturally, historically, and the necessity to come together to produce family, which is produces good community life. So we pour this libation to the spirit of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. We say Ashe. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Asante Sana means thank you.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network, on timeforanawakening.com, and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Brother Oshi. Hotel family, I hope everything is well with you today. I hope that you had a chance yesterday or any other time to do all the things that you want to do, need to do, have to do, must do, should do, better do, and can do. And I hope that the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But if it wasn't, that's right. You got to get it done. So just go ahead and do it, brothers and sisters. That's right. Get it done. This is Wednesday. And, of course, on Wednesday, my co-host is Brother Franklin Jones. We'll be with him in a minute. I'm going to run this lineup down. And then we're going to get into some serious, as we always do, with me and Brother Frank, some serious conversation. Of course, this is African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific Time, or any other time. But if you can't listen live, then you can go to the archives of previous recorded programs. You can go to timeforanawakening.com. Scroll down and get to the African world, African Perspectives, and you can, the programs are dated and titled, so you don't have to miss a program if you don't want to or you can to. So, on Mondays, Acres of Diamonds here on Time for an Awakening, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then from 8 p.m. to 9, Let's Buy Black 365. Let's Buy Black 365 from 8 to 9. On Tuesdays from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers on Tuesdays. On Wednesday, Revive with Sister PLC from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. On Thursday, tomorrow, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, in the spirit of Ujamaa Cooperative Economics, or as we like to say, Family-Centered Economics. And, of course, the conference, the ULU Power Conference, is this week. Friday, we will be at the cafe, the ULU Cafe, which, of course, is on 2036 Sylvan Road in the Sylvan Plaza, 2036 Sylvan Road, where the cafe is located. And, of course, if you want to know more about the cafe, just go to the website, Cafe ULU, CAFEULU.com, Cafe ULU. If you want to call to make sure that your coffee is ready and the kind of coffee you want, and you get there because you're on the run, give them a call at 470-788-8124, 470-788-8124. 1-800-273-1124. And, of course, to find out more about the conference this weekend and the details, go to the website, usliftingus.com. Usliftingus.com. So we're having the Power Summit, which is going to be, like I said, Friday is a meet and greet Friday evening for members and friends at the cafe. We'll meet as a group Friday morning at the cafe. And then this Saturday afternoon at Atlanta Technical College over on Metropolitan Parkway. And that'll be from 2 to 6 p.m. 2 to 6 p.m. We got a little lunch in there. And we have some dynamic presenters, great information. It is free. So come check out Us Lifting Us. On Friday, if it is Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern time, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Friday, time for an awakening. Saturday's Porch Talk with Troy Wilmore from 10 a.m. to 12 noon. And then Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., it's time for Revive with Sister POC. And then Sunday evening, 7 p.m. until time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Also, too, I just realized when I was giving this information out about the 21st Century Survival Conference here in Atlanta, April 14th, I'm going to be in Baltimore. I was like, man, because I really want to go to this conference. I really want to hear the presenters and talk to other brothers and sisters, because we really need to take a serious, critical assessment and some direction, because we'll be here 400 years next year. Allegedly, we landed here 1619 in Jamestown, and now it's going to be 2019, 400 years. And we need to understand that we can't be here 400 more years. Hell, we shouldn't even be here another damn day. But that conference is April 14th at the Shrine of the Black Madonna, the 21st Century Black Survival Conference, presented by Straight Black Pride, dealing with spirituality, culture, and survival. Spirituality, the eminent master teacher, Dr. Oshua Kwesi, will talk about African history and spirituality, the origins of the Bible and the Quran. My good friend, Baba Mwalimu Baruti, Baba Baruti, will be talking about a warrior's character, what it takes, because we need warriors. And survival, the irritated genie, will talk about African survival in the 21st century. That's the 14th of April, next month. Check that out. Let's get into some conversation. My co-host, Brother Franklin Jones, the Black Matrix, the Black People Matrix. My brother, how are you this morning?
I'm doing fantastic, my brother. And yourself?
I'm doing fine. You sound good.
I'm doing great. I thought the connection was lost. That's what I thought.
No, so how I got you. I'm doing great.
It's always a pleasure to hear you. Always a pleasure to hear your voice. And I was just viewing that information you sent to me, and it's illuminating. It's really powerful.
Yeah, it really is. And I don't know the real deep teachings of the Nation of Islam. I don't know the real deep teachings of a lot of stuff, okay? And when it becomes revealed, it kind of sets you back. Because, you know, I've worked with brothers and sisters in the Nation of Islam, especially in 95 with the Million Man March, but I've always worked with them. I spoke at the mosque in Milwaukee, Brother Minister William Muhammad, good brother, you know, and the other believers in the Nation, you know. But to find out that the teachings, you know, were anti-African, and when you hear what they're saying, you got to kind of pause and say, yeah, you know?
It's not surprising when we look at the origin, when we look at the fact that it was Islam who are Muslims that enslaved Africans long before Christians did. And these Muslims who came in, they had this ideology that they were superior to Africans. So when you are following the ideology of the oppressors, we shouldn't be surprised to see it. But it's shocking when you hear it, and when you hear the tapes of Minister Farrakhan himself saying these things, particularly about the way he described our woolly hair. You know, that was shocking.
Yeah.
That all we hear was somewhat of a curse.
It's a curse.
It was really incredible to hear.
Yeah. Because see, what it goes on is a theological as opposed to a scientific reasoning. You know, because you can, I mean, somebody's theology or their belief system, they can throw a whole bunch of stuff in.
Yeah.
But does it stand up to scientific scrutiny? And then if it doesn't, you need to reevaluate that. And that's the problem here. You know, it doesn't stand up to the scientific scrutiny, you know, that our hair is woolly because we are cursed. And I know the Ham story, and it's pretty much coming straight out of the Ham story. And if our listeners don't know the Ham story, here's a succinct version for you. God saw that sin was running rampant on the earth. And so God tried to find a righteous person on earth, because after he made man and then he had woman made from the rib of a man, and then, you know, they had two sons, and of course the two sons battled, and Cain kills Abel, and then Cain is sent out to the land of Nod, and of course he marries, and of course from that union the earth is populated. Well, of course, obviously Cain was a murderer, and so there's going to be evil. I'm just so then it comes to Noah, because sin is just running rampant. And so Noah, God sees that Noah is a good man, so he says, Noah, I want you to build a boat. I want you to build an ark. What is an ark? A big-ass boat. Whoa. Well, I'm landlocked here. There ain't no water here. Don't worry about it. Just build it by my specifications. This, that, and the other. So he does it. And, of course, all the people that are in that location look at him and say, this is a damn fool. And then God says to Noah, at the appointed time, you will know what it is. I will have animals coming to the ark, male and female. And, of course, that time came, and I want you to take you and your three sons, Ham, Shem, and Japheth, and their three wives, to go into the ark. I will cause it to rain for 40 days and 40 nights. And that's what happened. He sends out a raven, don't come back, so it's still bad out there. Sends out a dove. Dove comes back with an olive branch, so there's some peace, and things are settling. The ark settles, and all the animals go their way wherever the hell they think they are supposed to go. All land, because the whole earth is covered in water, and now the water has receded, and now the animals can go to their areas. Okay, so now Noah builds a vineyard, and of course, a vineyard is grapes, and of course, from grapes you get wine. And he got drunk. And Ham saw his father naked and tells his two brothers. His two brothers cover their father's nakedness. They walk backwards, so they don't see their father naked. And they cover him. When Noah comes out of that drunken stupor and is told what has happened, then he curses Ham to be servants unto his brother. That is the succinct version of that damn story, and why we are supposed to be cursed black and to be servants unto our brother. The interesting thing is that when you read the Bible, they'll say a few times, Ham, the father of Canaan. And what's ironic, Canaan is supposed to be the land where Palestine is, or present-day Israel is. And so these European Jews who claim that has their ancestral land, their historical and spiritual land, is supposed to be the land where Ham came from, because supposedly Japheth leaves and he ventures north and becomes Caucasian people. And Shem, he ventured a little bit to the northeast to become the Semitic people. Actually, really just next door, because the same people. I mean, the whole thing is it, the Bible, brothers and sisters, I'm just sorry. it's probably good literature, but it is not. And I repeat, the Bible is not historical. These are stories that are not historical. And in your rational mind, in your clear rational mind, they can't be believed because physically impossible, scientifically impossible. But they're good stories to give good moral teachings. But people, because there are people who believe that these things should be taken literally. And so then later, the European Jews who developed the Talmud, which is their teachings, just like the Muslims have the Hadith, which are teachings separate from their holy book. And in the Jewish Talmud, in the Talmud, it talks about the curse of Ham and how we're going to be looking. And it was funny to me, Brother Frank, when Brother Seti said, yeah, you know, he read it, because out of the Talmud, he said there will be black with big lips and nappy hair and elongated penises. And brother said, that's right, that ain't no damn curse. That's a blessing.
Yeah, the original Bible had the same thing about curse, nappy hair, and elongated penis. That mm-hmm. was in the original Bible also, the original American Bible.
Okay.
They doing slavery. Whites in America started applying the Ham curse to we African Americans when doing slavery. They always use narrative to justify their behavior. So they said that when they enslaved black people, that they were fulfilling the prophecy of that we were descendants of Ham. That's when they started applying that story to us. But when you study that history, first of all, like you were saying about the Bible, to believe that two of every animal from around the world walked over to the Middle East and got into all built by a 500-year-old man, it's totally bullcrap. And in fact, if you study the story of the Noah's Ark, that story is not even a true story. That's not even a Hebrew story.
Right.
That story was plagiarized from another story called a Mesopotamian story called the Galapchi Epic. And in the Galapchi, no, let me say it properly.
Yeah, Gilgamesh.
Gilgamesh Epic.
Yeah, the Gilgamesh.
And it talks about the same story, and mm-hmm. it's older than the story in the Bible. It's a plagiarism.
Sure.
It's not even our real history.
Right.
It's totally fictional. And it really, I think our problem is when we try to look at our history through a fairy tale, through a mythical book, it's ridiculous. You know,
right.
it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But it's a shame. But to overcome where we're at, we have to apply some real critical thinking. We have to critical thinkers. You know, it's amazing.
And that's hard to
think.
And it's hard to think critically when the theology is making you afraid, is scaring you, is condemning you to think anything outside of that.
Yeah.
You see?
They use the ideology of blind faith, you know? So if you start critically thinking, it's, oh, you're lacking God. If you start critically thinking, that's the devil trying to trick you. And that's how they keep our minds dumbed down under the term of blind faith. You know, it's really amazing when you see that God would put this great brain into our minds, this intelligent mind, and now a religion comes along that subdues intelligent thinking? Come on. At Most High wants you to think. You know, in our true system, you know, we live in a world where we believe that the option is between being a Christian or being an atheist. No, there's a third option. The third option is African spiritualism, which has a connection with the Most High. Some say it's inside, some say it's from above. But it's an intellectual way of thinking. It's a balance of how we treat of those around us, how we treat our environment, how we treat our communities. It's a balancing.
Yes.
You know? And it requires intelligent thinking. That's our original spiritual system, not religion.
No. And in fact,
that dumbs us down and imprisons our minds.
In fact, in that spirituality, there is no devil. There is no evil spirit that constantly tugs at you, constantly pulls at you, tries to make you do something that you know in your right mind you shouldn't do. There is no devil in African spirituality.
You see, but it's very good for Christianity and its offshoot. And I'm going to say it real. It's offshoot Islam. How does Islam come about? Of course. And what is the connection is through Abraham. Abraham is the father of all three religions. Now, once again, I think what becomes very problematic, because what I try to do is bring information that is historical, bring information that will help us become independent, become self-determining, become liberated, and become sovereign for African people. And it's very difficult. That's why I know brothers and sisters who are in theology, particularly Christian theology, and they call it liberation theology. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are some good brothers and sisters who are in the Christian church who have that mindset. I've been to some churches, one here in Atlanta. I mean, you know, Reverend Lomax, I'll even mention his name. Outstanding brother, beautiful church. They drum coming in. They use a lot of African-centered symbolism and so forth. And it's a good so for those who still want to deal with the idea of Christianity, that's a good move. But you know, but my feeling though is that we cannot liberate ourselves in somebody else's theology.
Agreed.
You know, and that goes for Islam as well. How do they come about? They come about through the story of Abraham. Now, the other thing is that it is very hard to find historical information about people that are mentioned in the Bible.
Yes.
It is very difficult. And the irony, though, Brother Franklin, is this, is that we have been charting history, because you can go to ancient Kemet and find people and find writings and find a Medu Netcher, what the Greeks call hieroglyphs, thousands of years ago that predate the Bible by thousands of years. So that method is there. And why they're not mentioned, just like my brother. Now, you know, Easter is coming up very, very soon. And the Ten Commandments movie will be on the Cecil B. DeMille version. And you might even see the later one that came out a few years ago, The Exodus, with Christian Bale as Moses. And you'll watch these stories like I've watched them. I mean, I never forget as a boy going to the theater to watch it in CinemaScope and Technicolor. You know, because I think at that time we didn't even have a color TV, you know. So, and then of course there was the movie so long, there was an intermission in the movie and everything like that, you know. And of course, you know, some of the scenes that were done in the movie, and now it's digitized. So when you watch it on your HD TV, it's even more vivid and so forth, you know. And of course, it's not a true story. The Exodus didn't happen. All of the biblical scholars and theologians, historians, archaeologists, I think they met about 20-something years ago, maybe a little longer, to debate that. And, of course, there was no proof that the Exodus ever happened, because my brother, who I considered a theologian, he's a Baptist preacher, but he knows the Bible front and back. And his rationale was, well, I'm going to tell you, The Pharaoh or the king was so embarrassed that because, you know, at that time, we're talking about, if they talk about a brother, when it's supposed to have happened, this is like the 18th, 19th dynasty of Seti the First and Ramesses the Second. That's thousands of years since the first dynasty was created by Norma. The 18th dynasty. So there's plenty of history already documenting. And so his rationale was, well, because the Pharaoh was so embarrassed and all the plagues that happened to Egypt that they struck it. Are you kidding me? Is some things that allegedly have happened the way they say they happened, all the plagues, the boils, the locusts, the hailfire, and then, of course, the firstborn dead, that wouldn't have been documented? You got to be kidding. If it really happened, if the Passover really happened.
Yes.
You know?
There's There's no evidence of anything that's mentioned in the Bible that happened, you know, in terms of Egypt. None. There's even extensive books showing that even stories of the slaves. I have a whole document about research shows that the entire evidence of the Bible, Jews in the Bible, is totally fiction. It's a work of fiction attached to an African history. And then there are these people who argue and want to maintain the illusion, maintain the lie. But to free ourselves, we have to overcome the lies, to free ourselves, emancipate ourselves. You know, it's amazing. Many of us are familiar with the term mental slavery, and that we must emancipate ourselves from it. But most people who are familiar with the phrase and use the phrase hold on to their mental enslavement. You know, it's incredible. It's amazing to be mental slaves because people walk around today with computers in their pocket, clinging to the lies that was taught to slaves. It's incredible.
Yeah. And also, too, the industry that is created through the theologies, particularly Christianity, because Christianity is very much, Christianity and capitalism go hand in hand. And then, of course, you see the mega preachers, you know.
Yes.
In fact, I told a brother, I said, you know, the top 10 money-making preachers globally of Christianity, the top 10, Creflo Dollar and T.D. Jakes aren't in the top 10, but three Nigerian preachers are in the top 10. Because they're making tens of millions of dollars, if not hundreds of millions of dollars, you know. Because Creflo is making serious money. I mean, hell, his congregation and those who would support him, they bought him that jet. He put it out there early on and got a lot of pushback, almost like he was having a GoFundMe.
Yeah.
You know? So he can get his jet, you know. But he got it, you know. He wound up getting it. And, of course, all the other preachers. And, of course, the Caucasian caught a lot of flack because his church, which is in the old arena where the Houston Rockets used to play, you know, it was closed when the flood was happening, you know, when the hurricane was happening. And then it later opened and he had some excuse trying to, you know, do damage control after the situation. But all of them, you know. But, you know, it is like this, though, Brother Frank. I had this discussion with a person who deeply believes in the Bible and Caucasian supremacy, because he was defending a Republican that he worked for, who is a real, so, but his thing was, and I told him, I said, let me tell you what your thing is, brother. You rather believe and it not be true, because it's not, than to not believe than it be true because of your fear that you will burn in hell. You see? So the theology of Christianity grips you in fear, and then you believe so strongly that anything else that comes at you, as rational as it can be, you reject it because your mind has been taken over by a theology that puts fear into you, you know, and tells you the only way that you will get to heaven is that you believe that Jesus is God. Jesus is your Savior. Yeah. Jesus is your Lord.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, there's so many things that become so problematic. Okay, I told the brother this one, Frank. I said, well, the letter J in the English alphabet did not come into existence until the 17th century, the 1600s. So then how can you talk about Jesus, Jews, Judea, Jerusalem? There's no letter J. How do you reconcile that in the English language? Well, of course, for Jesus, they say his name was Joshua. Okay. I mean, I mean, to me, they'll rationalize anything.
They will. The mind will find reasons to cling to the belief, and they will create any kind of fabricate any kind of crazy stories to hold on to it. But you know, in terms of that fear, I was in a situation where I'd long overcome that. When I was in Iraq, before going, they gave us dog tags, and on your dog tag, you put your blood type and your religion. I put no preference. While in Iraq, they had chaplains coming around, they'd ask you questions, and I would say, if I'm wounded out here, if I'm dying, don't bring any religious figure around me, none. I only know last rites, let me go. Because I've researched it enough to know that it's a fallacy, it's a lie, and I'm gonna go being awakened, not being a slave to false religion. And that was my stance in Iraq and my stance throughout life. Even in that environment, I knew that it was a falsehood because I thoroughly studied it enough to know. Those who believe in the religion does so from a perspective of being ignorant, because there's no way you can thoroughly study it and still cling to it unless it's just fear holding you there.
Right.
I was freed from it by thoroughly researching it. It's falsehood, total falsehood.
And see, what I have a problem with, well, a lot of it I have a problem with, but, let me just say this. This is a phrase from that great visionary, Stevie Wonder. He said, when you believe in things you don't understand, what happens? You suffer. And we have been a suffering people because we believe in stuff that we have no real comprehension. We are led to believe that this is the religion for you and your savior. And of course, not understanding how Islam. Well, let's go backtrack, because I want to make sure the audience knows how they came about. Because Abraham is the father of all three religions. Okay. He is regarded as Hebrew. And because his wife, Sarah, could not have children. You know, these stories are, biologically. But of course, as they say, Brother Frank, all things are possible through Christ, So his wife cannot have children. And now it's allegedly, as the Bible tells it in the Old Testament, that they were 90-some years old, okay? But, of course, in biblical times, you know, all kinds of good things can happen. So she has a handmaiden. Is Egyptian, Hagar. So Abraham has sex with Hagar, and she bears him a son, Ishmael. Well, then God says to Sarah, hey, I'm gonna get you pregnant. You're gonna have a son. So she tells Abraham, this chick, she got to go. Her and her crumb snatcher, they got to go, because I'm going to get pregnant by you, and we're going to have us a son. So she got to go. So they send Hagar and Ishmael away, and, of course, into the desert, but they were saved. And God said there will be a mighty nation. And they become, of course, Arabs or whatever. And out of that line comes Prophet Muhammad as an Arab. And Prophet Muhammad is a merchant that sells goods, takes his camels across the desert to sail over here and packs them up and over there. And in his travels, God comes down and introduces himself and says to Prophet Muhammad, you will be a great and mighty nation, and I want you to read. And, of course, the only miracle in Islam is that Allah, tells Prophet Muhammad to read. He said, I cannot read. I cannot read. He said, read. And he begins to read. And from that particular point on, the messenger, Prophet Muhammad, becomes enlightened, and he spreads his, and of course, he, through interpretation, through scribes, they write the Quran and later the Hadith, the sayings of Prophet Muhammad. And so Sarah has a son, Isaac. And God wants to test Abraham, his faithfulness, I guess, and tells him to take Isaac up to this place to as an altar and to sacrifice him. And just as he was about to do it, God says, whoa, 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 I was just testing you, dude, and you passed the test. Good job. I know. Listen, man, these are some stories. And hell, you can tell these damn things any way you want to, and this is the way I So
don't God already know your heart? Doesn't God already know your heart? Why do you need to test him like that?
That's so right.
That's trauma, you know?
So then Isaac, of course, grows old, and he has two sons. Isaac has two sons, Jacob and Esau, and they were twins. One trips one up in the womb. He loves Esau because Esau is like a man's man. He has hair on him, and he's a hunter, and so forth. And Jacob hangs around the camp helping mom and so forth, and da-da-da-da. Well, he's going blind, and he knows he's about to expire. So he sends for Esau, the wife, Isaac's wife. I don't know if it was Rachel or whoever. She tells Jacob, hey, he's about to give the blessing and the birthright to Esau. Because he told Esau, he summoned Esau and told him to go out there and make that good savory stew that he likes. So, but I want you to have the blessing. So they put hair on his arms, and they have the stew already made while Esau's out there hunting. And so they come into the tent where he is, and he says, the voice is the voice of Jacob, but he feels his hands, but the arms are the hands of Esau. And he gives him the stew, and he eats. It is the good stew that he likes. So he gives him, I'm not sure if it was the birthright first or the blessing first, whatever. And so he gives him one portion of it. And so he knows. So after he exits, the wife tells him, you better get up out of here, because when Esau comes back and find out what you've done, he's going to kill you. So he sends him out, you know, sends Jacob out. And, of course, Jacob, on his journey to his uncle's land, he sleeps and has the dream climbing Jacob's ladder, where he battles the angel and so forth. And then God says, no longer will your name be Jacob, but your name will be Israel. And so he hooks up with his father. And then Esau, check this out. So Esau does encounter him. But what happens is, and if anybody's listening, you know of the clear, because I'm not a theologian by no stretch. In fact, I say these stories just to how they are, because they're stories, you know. And so anyway, so they encounter again. But Jacob, Esau was hunting, and now he's famished. And he tells him, you know, what is a birthright or blessing to me when I'm so hungry I'm about to die? And so he feeds him. So that's how Jacob got both the blessing and the birthright from Esau, you see. And, of course, he even tricks his uncle to do something with some cows or whatever. So he's exceedingly blessed. And then, of course, he goes on and he has his 12 sons, the 12 tribes of Israel. And, of course, that one of the sons is Joseph, who gets sold off into enslavement in Egypt. But of course, he can interpret dreams, so he becomes like an advisor to the Pharaoh. And then, of course, Jacob and him are hungry, and his family come into, or Israel, they come into Egypt, because Egypt is the place that people went for refuge. Egypt is the place that people went for security and solitude. In fact, Jesus, when he was being hunted as a firstborn, they went to Egypt. And so if Jesus was, let me just say this, Brother Frank, if you wanted to hide, would you go hide in Utah, or would you stay here in Atlanta if you wanted to hide?
You'd hide with among those that look like you, you know?
Exactly. You know, but see, these are the stories. And I'm saying is that You know, I know for those who are Christian, it is all is so blasphemous. But let me say this to those. Considering what has happened to our people because of this theology, that's blasphemous. Because our minds are so warped because of this theology, that is a grave wrong, an egregious wrong. And we have been made, this has been an impact, like Islam, both religions, which are proselytizing religions, they seek converts, and they would seek converts under the threat of death. So if you didn't, then, hey, if you didn't succumb and bow down to it and accept that theology, you were going to die. And so you accept it under the threat of death.
Mm-hmm.
That's just,
you know, it's funny,
go ahead.
It's funny to say that Dr. Ben Johanan, in his lectures about the origin of Christianity, he talks about when the Romans created the modern Christianity in 224 AD, that there were Africans who opposed this new religion, and they were put to death. In fact, Dr. Ben said the first to put to death were two women. They were when they created Christianity, they were killing people to accept it. When you go into the story, it's incredible. The only reason we believe it is because of our ignorance of the true history. They murdered people to accept Christianity. It's incredible. In fact, there's a brother that I researched for many years. His name was Arian. He was an African.
Right.
And instead of killing Arian, the Romans banished him. So I started studying what was it that Arian hated, why he was so against Christianity. And it was there I started learning so much information. He opposed the story of the Immaculate Conception, the Trinity. He opposed the story of the Messiah. All that was fiction. It's just really incredible, but they were killing people.
Yes.
The Emperor Constantine himself was a dictator, and he killed people to accept it. If you was against it, you died.
Right.
But as time went on, now people revere it. People fight you to rather than accept evidence of the religion.
Right.
It's amazing how people can be programmed. Don't realize how easy we're programmed. You know?
Right. And when I've told Christians they really need to research the Nicene Conference of 325 AD.
That's it.
The Nicene Conference when Constantine brought all the... Because, see, he saw the divisions within the kingdom, the religion, the empire, the Roman Empire. And see, and he said, well, I'm going to solidify this. And of course, he's allegedly had a dream that he was going to conquer through the symbolism of the cross. He was going to conquer. And so any religion that did not support what they wanted to happen, because everybody's supposed to have come with their books, with their doctrines, with their whatever. And only those that would support what they wanted to do, because at that time, Jesus's birthday became December 25th at that time, Easter, all of these concepts were being initiated.
And they destroyed 18 books of the original doctrine to produce the Bible. And before then, the teaching was of a man who they say was born in a cave in Ethiopia of a traditional birth. He himself never said he was a Messiah. And his followers never worshiped him as a Messiah. But when at a Nicene conference, they turned his character into a Messiah. As you know, they use Egyptian folklore, the story of the Messiah, that even goes into ancient Babylon. And they turn this character into that religion to create the Jesus Messiah. But it was never the case before that.
Right. And that's the other thing is that, you know, the foundation of Christianity particularly is African, is Kemetic, is ancient Kemetic theology, that they didn't believe it. They didn't believe it physically. They believed it spiritually.
Yeah.
You see, they understood that, you know, when they created Amun-Ra, that which is the main god, Amun, which is the unseen forces, and Ra, the physically seen force, the rays of the sun, and how important that was. And then they had other deities. Some say, well, they were so polytheistic. But I mean, you know, when you look at the 19th dynasty of Akhenaten, you know, Amenhotep III, he had to worship Aten. But of course, once he passed, they went back to honoring Amun-Ra and so forth. And of course, they had a male and female god, which was Osir, which the Greeks called Osiris, and Aset, which the Greeks called Isis. And they had a son. Of course, the Greeks called him Horus, but his name was Heru. And in any Kemetic theology and in Kemetic life, there had to be harmony and balance, because one of another main god was Maat. And Maat is a wing god, a female deity, you see, where we get the idea of angels and so forth. And they took all of that that had been thousands of years in the making, and then fashioned it within Christianity and said, ours is historical. Yours is a myth. Yours is both. What makes yours historical when you can't even prove it? And that a myth when you're taken almost literally from that. We got a caller, Brother Frank. We're going to take a caller, okay?
Okay.
You bet.
Okay.
602 caller.
Yes, Brother Ocean, Brother Frank. Brother Marcus.
Brother Marcus, how you been, man? You been okay?
Yes, my good brothers.
All right. Good to hear from you.
You know, Brother Oshie, you speak the truth, you know, because that is the opium, you know. That religion is what keep our people in that frozen psychological state. You know, because if you can't solve your problem, somebody else is going to come from out of the sky and solve the problem for you. You just have to meekly wait and murmur not, and your reward shall be great in the by and by. Not now, you know, not while you're here. You're going to get yours when you die. And that was the psychology they was using on the slave back in the field.
Right.
You're going to get yours in the by and by. You know, don't worry. You know, you got to suffer here now. And then, you know, the more you suffer, is the greater your reward going to be. And in every black community, it's like that. Every corner, there is a church.
Right.
Every nook and cranny, there is a church. Now, where I'm from in Jamaica, is the same thing as you explained in Nigeria. Revivalism now in Africa is taking, you know, it's all across Africa.
Oh, listen, you know? Brother Marcus, when I went to Ghana, my first time, I was so appalled at all these billboards of white Jesus. It sickened me. And then I think the third time I went to a couple of churches and the church services. And, of course, the church service is Christian. It's Christian like it is in any other church that dictates the religion. So it's the same thing, you see. You know, and our problem is that We have become made to feel so ashamed and so embarrassed of our history, of our culture, of our spirituality, because it's primitive, it's backwards. And because of that, you know, they've imposed this, and Brother Marcus and listeners, be clear, they did not give us Christianity to save our souls, because they believed that we had no souls. They gave us the Christianity because they knew that it could make us docile. It could make us believe that through this suffering, because contained in the religion, contained in the scripture itself, slaves, obey your masters, if you would obey me.
Yes, they use the religion as a psychological club, you know. You said Islam too in Africa. It's prevalent in North Africa. It's prevalent, you know. They have their, you know, and it's the same treatment of black people. You know, black people being disrespected. You know, black women being disrespected. You know, so we have a big task on our hands.
Yes,
not only here, But on the continent,
yes, we do.
More so.
Yes,
you know,
we do.
So let's tighten our belt. You know. Anyway, I'll continue listening and you take care. Good
oh,
brother.
Good Thank to you. Hear from you, Brother Marcus. Continue to listen. Appreciate you, brother. Have a blessed day.
All right.
Peace.
All right.
Go ahead, Brother Frank.
No, I was listening. Yeah. You know, it's really something like you were saying about this mindset, but I love programs like yours because you create the counter information. You're helping people understand because there are a lot of people out there who are surrounding the communities, around religious communities, and they're looking for people like yourself. They want to hear what you're saying, and it uplifts these people. And our numbers are growing larger because of programs like this. You know, it validates. Their questions, their doubts about Christianity. Because mm-hmm. it's great to know that other people out there realize the falsehood that we're being programmed to believe.
You know, I love our people. I love our people whether they believe what they believe, if they love us and they love themselves. It's hard for me to love somebody who doesn't love me because I'm not Christian, who doesn't love me because I'm not Muslim, you know. That's very difficult, but that's what we're trained to do. And also, too, Christianity, just like the people who talk about liberation theology, Christianity does not speak to us collectively. Christianity is an individualistic religion. When you see somebody, hey, how you doing today, brother? Oh, well, I'm blessed and highly favored. Oh, you're blessed and highly favored, right? Well, your family's going to hell. Drug addicts and so forth. Your family's gone. You know, your kids are bad doing crime and so forth. But you're blessed and you're highly favored. You know, I mean, I even met some many years ago talking with some. They wanted the tribulation to happen. You know, the whole idea of the tribulation is that because you are saved, that you will be raptured, that God will save you from all the calamities and all the Holocaust and all of the apocalypse that are going to befall the earth because you're saved. But everybody who's not saved are going to, you know, go through this physical hell, you know. And they want to, I'm praying for it to come. I can't wait to be raptured up and da-da-da. Man, you know, it's crazy. I'm going to take a break, so stay right with us. I see I got another caller, so just staying with us. I'm going to take a break. And you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And you can join this conversation after this break by dialing 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We'll be right back.
Dressed down in a braid, brothers with their afros taking center stage, watching as this culture slowly comes of age with a mind of its own. Yeah, mothers out in the yard hanging up her clothes, fathers playing with the kids, keeping them on the go. Neighborhoods beating on the heart of its soul. And that's where my feelings live. Cause I love my people the way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Straight to the kitchen table. My heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. And I'm loving my people. Teachers off in the classroom giving up the love, supported by that mom and dad who want that special touch. Little acts of kindness prove to mean so much when we give what we know. a banging smell of soul food fills the air. You walk past the neighbor's house wishing you had dinner there. Better times for living when people seem to care about that place where they grow. That's why I love my people, the way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Said I love my people. I love. So from the stove straight to the kitchen table, my heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. And I'm loving my people. Folks gather at the church early Sunday morn. Openly they sing and praise and gospel music's born. God gave us love enough with spirits free to run. Why can't we learn to love ourselves like we're the chosen one? Come and let me know how your life is doing good. Tell me how the blessings flow through the neighborhood. Share with me that time of feelings understood in that place we call home. 'Cause I love my people, the way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Said that I'm loving mine. I love. So from the stove straight to the kitchen table, my heart's full of love, spirits in the flow. And I'm loving my people. Said I love my people. I love. The way they let it go on the dance floor. Ain't nobody gonna do it like us, no. I'm loving my people. Say that I'm loving mine. I love. So from the stove straight to the kitchen table. Can't nobody do it like us now. I'm loving my people. Say that I'm loving mine. I love. I'm loving my people.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. You're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradio.com. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Also on Mondays from 6 p.m. to 8, Acres of Diamonds. And then right after that program from 8 to 9, Let's Buy Black 365. On Tuesdays, Dr. William Rogers, Black Reality Think Tank from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Tuesdays. On Wednesdays, Sister POC Revive from 8 p.m. to 10. Also, too, on Thursdays, tomorrow night, Us Lifting Us, ULU, the Economic Development Cooperative for Our People, from 9 p.m. to 10. On Friday, if it's 8 p.m. Eastern Time, it's time for an awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 12 noon, Sports Talk with Troy Wilmore. And Sunday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., no, it's not Brother Oshi from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Sunday. It's Revive with Sister POC. Proof of Consciousness. And Sunday evening, we're back with Time for an Awakening with Brother Richard and Brother Elliot. That's the rundown. More shows to come. We'd definitely love to get that show with Brother Paul from the UK. That'll be dynamic. We have a caller. Go ahead, caller 267.
Hey, I want to say good morning to you, Brother Oshie, and good morning to Brother Franklin. I'm sitting back and enjoying this dialogue. It really needs to be had, my brother. Can you hear me all right, Brother Oshie?
I can hear you well. I can hear you. Go ahead, Ralph.
Okay. Now, this is what I could tell from you and Brother Franklin's conversation when you first opened the show, that you've been following a little bit of that YouTube dialogue that I've been following.
Yes.
And the thing about it, I'm now, a lot of people that I turn on to that, brother, that, you know, our people have to get more open-minded. Like you said, something in us make us just, like, I turned it on to a couple of brothers, you know, the dialogue and the thing about they couldn't get past
the profanity.
Language.
Yeah.
And but if you really listen to that brother, Brother Oshie, he brings a lot of truth.
Oh, yeah.
Because I remember, and I'm a brother that only speaks from my experience. I don't tell you how you should live, what you should do, and I don't do none of that. I just see what works in my life and what didn't. And I remember as a young man going to the Nation of Islam back in the late 80s, I remember the way they trashed Malcolm X. They called him Malcolm Little. They called him a traitor. They say he deserved to be shot down like that again. I mean, I heard this dialogue when I was going to the mosque number, I believe it's mosque number 12 or in Philadelphia. And I was a young man then. And my day of opening my eyes, the day I opened my eyes to that cult, because that's what I'm going to call it, when they said, the minister says, we need 25, I believe the amount was 25,000. So they put two bodyguards up at the door. They said, nobody leaves until we pledge this $25,000.
Wow.
I said, well, this is a cold-blooded gangster movie. You know what I mean? Now, me and my ex-wife, we were young. We were trying to find some guidance. We wanted a religion that we could, like, probably relate to. And she's my ex-wife now. But we were young. So, you know, the only thing that institution was, it seemed like they zoomed in on me was, oh, that's where you work at? Okay, well, you know, this is what we want from you. So I'm only speaking for my, I'm not speaking no falsehood. I'm not talking any lies. I heard all about Yacoub and how he's the evil scientist that made the white race. And the only people that I've seen, and I'm so glad that brother is bringing this up. The only people I've seen that religion bully is us. When we don't agree with them. And I saw the way they confronted that little young brother on YouTube a couple of nights ago. Now, I don't like his dialogue either, but he seemed like a very intelligent, open-minded young brother. And they bullied that man. And one thing I got out of that young brother was he said he's been getting death threats. Now, see, that's the thing. Why don't you give death threats to
Samuel?
Who was that? To the guy down there in Sanford, Florida that shot tape. Give him death threats. Mm-hmm. Why are you attacking your own? So, see, this is the kind of nonsense that I see out of these religious institutions. You're absolutely right. You know, we believe in a bunch of nonsense, a bunch of falsehoods. It took a brother called Ray Higgins to wake me up to show me how stupid I really. And instead of getting mad at this man, I bought more of his DVDs and his CDs. Now, you know, a lot of people call him a traitor and he's just that. I learned a lot from Brother Ray Higgins, man.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? So I'm not going to call that brother no traitor. I'm not going to. That man has helped me out tremendously as far as my religious upbringing. So, you know, I just had to call in and say I'm enjoying this dialogue. And that one brother also said something last night, because I was listening to him again last night. My wife, she sits back and she's listening too. I said, did you hear what he just said? Because what he just said went way over your head. She said, what did he say? He said the days of the week are also nothing more than Roman gods.
Right.
He talked about Thor being Thursday, Wednesday, Saturday. These are Roman gods that we mentioned.
Saturday comes from Saturn, yes.
Right.
So, you know, I said, like, see, the average person don't know why we think we're not caught up in this worshiping European gods. We mention their names every day and don't even realize
exactly.
So, you know, brother, listen, I appreciate the slow awakening that we're coming out of, because I include myself.
Oh, yeah, me
I
too.
I include myself. You know, and when I see stuff like that, it brings back old hurts, because I actually Now, one of my friends, he went and he joined that religion and he ran with it until he, you know, the day he died. God bless his soul, you know. But I couldn't do it, man. God saw right through, and I did not. And then after the movie Malcolm X came out, they changed their whole tune like they never said this stuff. I thought he's a but a bunch of liars and hypocrites, you know. Like they never said. I heard them say we should dig them up and shoot them again. I heard this. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that brother is not lying. Nothing he said. I heard about the kinky hair. I heard about we were black people and that we were the Asiatic black man. Nothing about Africa, but we were the Asiatic black man and we had straight hair and we were cursed because we were rebellious people. Our lips got big and we should have hair. Like, I've heard all that, brother. So this brother is not lying. Brother, I was in there for about a good 6 months before I said, I gotta get away from these guys. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I gotta get away from this institution. So, you know, Brother Osi, I'm glad y'all having this dialogue, though. But, religion, I don't care how you take a paintbrush and paint it, it's no good for us. It's no good for us. If we don't have a good, sound mind to call things like it really is, then we're done, man. Creflo Dollar, D.D. Jakes, all those clowns. How can you even believe in some nonsense like that? But I just had to like call in and tell you thank you for this dialogue today. And I wish more people could get past that brother's language because he's bringing it.
Oh, no doubt.
He'll be bringing it.
Oh, no, he's
bringing it.
Right, Sarusetti's a good researcher. He is a good researcher. He's just so damn profane. It's just that it's hard, you know?
Yeah, it's hard. Though.
You bet.
So I'll continue listening, brother.
Appreciate it, brother.
Came out to my car, but I'm listening, man. And I appreciate your dialogue. I just wanted to call in and let you know that.
Thank you, Brother Ralph. Peace to you, my brother. Have a blessed day.
You too.
Hey, Ralph. Ralph.
Yes,
yeah. ASCAC is in your city this weekend. The Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations. I don't remember where they're holding the meeting, but ASCAC is in your city. Some good brothers and sisters in the study of ancient classical African civilizations, and they'll have some good information and stuff. So I don't know if you get a chance to check them out, but please do, okay?
You know, I'm going to get that information off Brother Elliot. I know he's well aware of it, because I was going to go down to D.C. to be with Brother Siddiqui and them this weekend, but if there's something right up here in the city, I might as well just go here.
Okay.
So, I'll get the information off Brother Elliot and find out where they're located so I can attend.
All right,
Brother Oshi, thanks for the information.
Oh, you bet. Peace to you.
Peace, man.
So, Brother Frank, you know,
yes.
I know that this, and I'm going to, later in the program, defend Minister Farrakhan's being attacked by the European Jews. I definitely want to do that, because they're doing it again, what they have been doing for the last about 30 years since the 80s. In fact, what's interesting, since the early 80s, there's a picture of Farrakhan and a military person on the White House lawn with Reagan and Meese and all his other criminals, partners in crime. But since that time, of course, he has been consistently vilified, and those who are politicians or actors or whoever are made to repudiate him, made to deny him, and so forth. So I'm going to defend that. But let's take, you want to take another call? Let's take another call. 646, go ahead.
Yeah, Hotep, Brother Ocean, to your guest.
Hey, what's up, Jay?
I just came in, so I may have heard the back end of Brother Ralph. Was he by the chance talking about Louis and Sarah Tsutsetti?
Yes.
And Young Pharaoh's rant?
Yes.
Oh, okay. That sounds kind of interesting. I heard Seti do his thing, you know, but you can't listen to Seti for long periods of time because he just cursed too much. Man.
I know, he's just too profane.
I mean, I've known Seti for years. But the point of it, I don't know if you could really dispute what Seti is saying. I think there's a lot of truth to what he's saying. And, you know,
Well, see, Jay, it's like this, though. In that piece, it's about a 50-minute piece.
Yeah.
And you're right. And it's really tough. But he uses the words of Elijah Muhammad, and he uses a tape from Minister Farrakhan to justify the teachings and saying pretty much that we're not African and they're anti-African, and saying the same thing that the European Jews said in the Talmud about us as being cursed, and the curse of Ham, our hair, our nose, our lip, our dark skin, ugly. And then Farrakhan even goes even further to say, you know, some things that that to me are hurtful. I will defend him. I would defend him in this attack by Europeans or anybody else. But I have never been a real follower of the theology. I couldn't get it. I couldn't get the spaceship, the wheel, all of it. I'm sorry. Right, I don't get it. Go ahead, Jay.
To put it in the context, I think as far as we can, I wouldn't call it, or some would call it, a religion. I call it more or less of an organization. If we are to be honest about it, it's done some good things.
Yes, it has. It's
but
done some very good things.
If you really put it into context, I would probably have to say, in all truthfulness, looking at history and my little bit of study of history and understanding of history, people may disagree with me, I call it a government organization, in all truthfulness.
You call
because
it
if you really take
you call it,
a
well,
government
Jay,
organization,
wait, Jay, I didn't
a
really
government
hear.
Control, I call it a government-controlled organization.
Wow. Okay, go ahead.
And the reason why I say that is because, to be honest, there's nothing tangible that you can look at right now that the nation has produced other than some fine men and women who live a pretty moral lifestyle. They have no businesses. They don't control anything in regards to governance. You know what I mean? They really have no institutions that could sustain their members or sustain black people. I mean, if we're going to be honest about it, you know what I mean? Where's their grocery stores? Where's their, you know, cleaners and things of that nature that they had back in the 60s and 70s?
This is
they
true.
Don't have those things anymore.
This is true.
I mean, what is they teaching today that's basically the same of what Malcolm and Elijah was teaching back then? Now they're more into this nonsense Scientology and some other things. So, I mean, to be honest, you know, if Farrakhan was so much of a threat that they deemed him to be, he wouldn't be walking around. He would be in a cage like other brothers and sisters, Jermaine Alameen. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, we have to be honest about it. You know what I mean? Every time you turn around, he's making these attacks against Jews that are really no value to him or the community. All it does is expose the weak Negroes that we have in leadership because they got to bow down to this filthy, stinking Jew, which I would never do. So, in context, you know what I mean? And he's causing more problems for black people than he really is, because he's the litmus test for these crackers to use when they want to put some sort of black politician or some other figure out in the open. They use his statements to do that. You know what I mean? So that, to me, is somebody that I believe is working in cahoots with death. I'm going to keep it real with you.
Yeah.
Because if he would not talk about the Jew, then they would have no reason, basically, to make black folks or so-called black leaders have to compromise themselves and speak out against his BS. Now, we just got to be real about it. But, you know, we deal in worshipship. We deal in needing a hero.
That's right.
We deal in, we got to have some sort of figure to lead us to nothing. It's just like, you know, people that's on TV. What do they lead you to? They lead you to whiteness. They never talk about any African values or African principles. So, I mean, you know, you gotta put it in context, bro.
That's right.
That's all. So when you have Seti go in and go at him, you know it's a show. It would be more effective if he wouldn't coach so much.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And use the knowledge that he has, because I don't care what nobody says, Seti has extreme knowledge. Very few have the knowledge and wisdom that he has. He just has a real nasty, provocative way of expressing it that's, you know, not too cool.
Right.
But I mean, as far as his presentation, if I can listen to it, I would say he would, you know, really expose Louis for what he is, you know, and Elijah Muhammad for what he is.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then he'll probably get a little ugly and talk about Faraz Muhammad being right. The Yorugu that he was.
Right.
You know, so I mean, you just got to put it all into context and just deal with it. You know, I mean, we sometimes don't want to address, you know, certain things because we feel that we've been disrespectful. But if you be honest and you put Farrakhan into context, I mean,
right.
Come on, man.
Right.
He ain't producing nothing on the level that he should be with the supposed army that he claims to have, you know, because I'll say this. If your base is in the south side of Chicago and you're supposed to be who you say you are, you're supposed to control the south side of Chicago economically.
And that's not happening.
That's
and also too,
and it ain't gonna happen.
No, and also too, when you look at the death and destruction that goes on in Chicago for the last 4 or 5 years has been the murder capital of this country. Every holiday, so-called weekend, you can anticipate literally tens of or a hundred shootings with about 15, 20 people dead. You know?
But let me point something out to you that think about this and how the government uses individuals to put them in a certain position to be seen as a semi-messiah. There was a time back, I think, in the 80s or the early 90s, where the nation had a security force, or they had members that owned a security force, and they would go into certain communities and honestly clean the communities up, cut the violence in half and everything, and they was getting government contracts.
That's right.
And what happened was they put an end to that. So in the process, that now shuts down the nation from going into communities and, you know, controlling and stopping the violence. But think about it this way. If you was really about your business, you wouldn't need government contracts.
Exactly. You
that.
Would do it.
You would just go about doing it.
That's right. You would just do it.
Positioning to yourself in a position to where you're able to sustain it, where the community sustain it and would be glad to sustain it, you know, in other ways, by, hey, opening up a store, doing this, doing that, you know what I mean? Taking over the community, becoming the landlord or whatever, you know what I mean? Bringing forth commerce to whereas you could sustain the individuals that were changing the community. But that never happened. You see, so you gotta put all of these things into context, who and what you're dealing with. And you're not dealing with individuals who really are about what they proclaim to be about. You know what I mean? I mean, they're just a group that functions quite well and has done some really good things for Black people.
Yeah.
And, you know, but on the whole, if you put it into its context, it's not a nation because it can't even sustain their own damn selves. They're not hiring their members. They're not clothing and feeding and doing anything to sustain their members in this society. So, I mean, it's your typical Negro rhetoric.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And they just got exposed by Seti because he's the type of individual that gets off
That's right.
Doing stuff like that. Exactly. So, you know, you opened yourself up to, like my boy say, a savage to ravish you. You know what I mean? And that's
no, you're right,
gonna,
Jay.
He's going to do his thing because he didn't go back. You know what I mean? So now what you going to do? The only way you're going to back him down is by physically attacking him.
Right.
Because you're not going to do anything to him intellectually because right. you can't deal
when you come with a narrative of fact right. trumps a narrative of faith, particularly when it's not substantiated by fact or historical fact. So you really don't, I mean, you know, so the only thing that the nation can do is ridicule him, threaten him, and so forth. And of course, that doesn't do anything. That doesn't look good.
That don't do nothing.
No,
that don't do nothing for a person like him because you know he get another offer that.
Oh,
he
showed him.
That's his fuel.
That's right.
His fuel to keep him going. I mean, if they, you know what I mean, that gives him 2 hours of material to talk his madness. That's therapy for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because he gotta have someone to attack. You know what I mean? And it seems like at this stage in the game, Farrakhan needs somebody to attack, so he goes to his likely target, the dude who basically don't pay him no mind, but in the process, all he does is, you know, make other people have to show their hand.
Right.
Because how could you respect some man that's gonna, you know, repudiate something that done happened years and years ago, and every time it happens, you got to come back to me to repudiate someone. I'm not playing that game for you, Yoruba.
Yeah.
Who gives you the right to repudiate anybody
for real?
The way you treat the Palestinian people.
Right, and that treat us.
That would be my quick answer all the time. Yeah. How could you ask me to repudiate anyone with the treatment that you allowed to happen to the Palestinian people, which is basically a form of genocide?
Right.
I mean, if the truth be told, the way the Jews treat the Palestinians is worse than the way the South Africans treated the Africans.
Yeah.
The Moors treated the Africans.
And, of course, the Jews had a hand in that as well. The European Jews had a hand in that as well. In fact, Israel gets diamonds is through South Africa. The major importer of Israel and the major exporter of Israel is diamonds, and they control diamonds in the world.
Yeah, so let's not play no games here. You know what I mean? But then again, you know, most of our people don't know that, and most of our people are not going to stand up and put forward that type of analysis. Because they feel they're getting trouble, you know what I mean? I don't know who the Negro more scared of, the Sky Daddy or the Jew. You know what I mean? If the truth be told, and I could give a damn about both of them.
I say.
You know, I don't care. But look, Brother OG, wanted to call in, man.
Thank you, Jay.
And tell you, you know, keep on doing what you're doing to your guests. You know, keep on doing what you're doing. Because the bottom line is, if we don't speak the truth, we'll never know the truth.
That's right.
Because it's not like these folks that are out here in La La Land are going to do anything but try to kiss the feet of that Jew. You know what I mean? As a matter of fact, in all truthfulness, the Jew don't give a damn about what we think anyway. Because they're going about the business at hand.
Exactly.
And when they got to do what they got to do, they do what they got to do. So it's all a game and a joke to them. Because they know they got, in all truthfulness, and if we go keep it real, they know they got Negroes on remote control. Hold up, brother.
Hold up, Jay.
Later on this week.
All right. Have a great week, brother. Have a great day, Jay. Peace to you. Go ahead, Frank.
Brother Jay can bring it, don't he?
He do, man. I love when Jay comes on, man. I know it's going to be some
dialogue. Brother Jay, he's definitely with that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You know, No, brother. He was true. He was right. What he said about my brother said. Your brother said he'd be bringing it, but brother said doesn't realize that in some ways, the way she conveyed is like a thug is the construct of white supremacy. The mannerism of cursing, the vulgarity, calling out the N word over and over, that in itself does a disservice to his message.
That's right.
And the brother doesn't realize it. And I guess the brother is perhaps too stubborn
in his mindset to realize that he does himself a disservice. I give an example. Let's use the nation of Islam that he's now bringing information about. The reason what made the nation of Islam so effective and spread these anti-African messages inside their core study is that when they present themselves, they present themselves intelligently and articulately, okay? So therefore, their message continues to spread. If he wants to now counter what they're saying, he can't come bringing vulgarity. He can't come from using the N-word. He can't come cussing at people like he's doing. You know, even though he is truth and he is exposing lies that they're presenting, if he wants to be effective, he can't do so by cursing and belittling and the way he's talking. He has to articulate himself in a professional, intelligent manner. Don't make excuses, or I'm just keeping it real. This is how I talk, and yeah, we niggas. No, that is, you know, you can't bring forward truth while doing so in a terrible manner and be effective. So while I appreciate the brother, I do not agree with the manner in which he's bringing it forward, you know? And it also brings this also, what we know. When you are enlightened, and Malcolm X is an example of this. Malcolm X used to sell drugs. He used to sell prostitutes. He used to do his thing. But when he became enlightened, it was seen in how he presented himself, how he articulated himself, you know? And we know that Malcolm loved Africa. We also know that Malcolm was a student, not just of Elijah Muhammad, but he was a student also of Dr. Henry Clark.
That's right.
As I said, he used to go to Dr. Henry Clark to teach him. In fact, when Malcolm X was assassinated, Dr. Henry Clark was preparing to give a presentation. When he got the word that Malcolm X was assassinated, he asked to use the bathroom. He went into the bathroom and cried like a baby.
Yes.
Because that's how much he loved Malcolm.
That's right.
Okay? So, in the example of Malcolm X, when you present yourself, you do not present yourself calling your people a nigger. You don't present yourself using thug stands. You don't present yourself. That's not the way of the enlightened spirit. And when the spirit of the ancestors consumes you, you do not act the way the white man has programmed you to act. You don't speak the way the white man programmed you to speak. So he does himself a terrible disservice, even though his message is about liberating the minds of our people, because his entire behavior is a construct of what the white man taught us to be thugs.
Yeah.
So he does himself a disservice.
Brother Frank, I wholeheartedly agree with you. In fact, I've often said I had never heard of Cyrus Setty, and some young brothers in Milwaukee brought him to a venue, a friend of mine's venue. And so I'm going to go check him out, you know, because I had been on the Young Brothers program a few times, you know, because they know where my heart and mind is. And so I'm sitting there listening, and there's a young kid, little kids running around, and he's going off like that. And I'm like, whoa, you know, it was hard. In fact, I'm going to be honest with you. It was at that moment, it was hard for me to deal with his message because the messenger was so vulgar, you know, because I really wanted to hear the message.
And the message is wrapped in shit. Okay? Now, you wonder why people are getting the message if you're wrapping it in shit.
Yeah.
It's easier to get people poison and wrapping it in sugar.
Yeah.
That's probably giving them the truth and wrapping it in shit.
Yeah. And so, you know, but when I first heard it, and I knew some of the theology, I've never embraced the theology. I don't embrace no theology.
I'm not against the truth the brother's saying. I'm not defending the nation of Islam. I love the fact that the brother is showing the fallacy in the religion. I love that fact.
Mm-hmm.
But I really think that your brother needs to recognize, man, you can't. It's easier to feed people poison wrapped in sugar,
right,
than to feed people wrapped in vulgarity and negativity and shit.
Yeah.
And there are those who are defensive. They're so, you need to give the brother, man. The brother's rubbing the knowledge. But it's like we have this group of people that has this dumbed-down ideology, and we must not allow the dumbed-down way of thinking to prevail within our community.
No.
Because we are not thugs. We are not niggas.
That's right. Thank you.
So demonstrate.
Thank you. Yes.
We are the ones who, we are the villainous of the pyramid. We didn't sit around saying niggas and thugs and speak in that manner. We can articulate intelligently. So I don't condone what he's, the way he conveys himself, because what he does is you try to listen and you have to block out so much vulgarity, so much.
Yeah.
I can't play his stuff for black youths to listen to. I have to do mentor programs for young black men, and mm-hmm. I couldn't play what he's playing to black students.
No, I couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, I'm just, I'm going to always keep it as, quote, real. I am who yes. I am. And just like the Gladys Knight song, just like Gladys Knight song, my daddy could swear, I declare, because I cuss. I swear I do. But I don't mm-hmm. cuss on this program. When I give presentations, depending upon where it is. Now, I may throw a point in there to emphasize something, because sometimes it's called for. Because believe me, it's not about, I don't use the N-word to describe our people. I don't use the B-word to describe our women, but I cuss. But I don't use those words because I love us so much and I love our women so much that I don't call them a female dog. I don't call us that word that is one of the most despicable words and that our scholars have deemed and they understood the origin of that word and its evil use. So, no, I don't do. And I know that some of us who say, well, you know, we love that word. In fact, we co-opted that word. We say it, you know, in as a term of endearment or a term of affection. You know, in fact, one group of brothers, they took the word and made it an acronym. You know,
mm-hmm.
never ignorant getting goals accomplished. Nigga, never ignorant getting goals. And I said, man, I'm going to tell you, if that was the truth, I'd be going nigga, 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 nigga every day.
You okay. know what? What's amazing, and there's a saying, and it's so true, and it goes, and this goes back to the Bible. I hate quoting the Bible, but it fits here, where it goes, my people are destroyed for their lack of knowledge, okay? Words have power.
Yes.
They affect our psychology, okay? We become what we continually say that we are. For example, a woman who declares herself as being a bitch starts acting like one. A man who calls himself a thug is more likely to engage in a fight than to avoid a fight, okay? Men who call themselves a dog are more likely to cheat, okay? We become what we say. And this is a phenomenon that propaganda designers have known for years, okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, the word nigga has been a program upon us for centuries. And the changing the spelling of the word nigger doesn't benefit us,
right?
Because our psychology, our subconscious mind, doesn't recognize the difference in a spelling,
right? So what you're saying, so
N-I-G-G-A or niggas with different spelling,
right?
It doesn't change the original programming because the subconscious mind does not recognize the difference in the spelling. So when we continue to call ourselves nigger, regardless of the spelling, it only reaffirms the original psychological program that nigger was used upon the black mind.
Mm-hmm.
So when they create these names, oh, it has a new meaning. These people are ignorant, and instead of ignorant, they're clinging to these different spellings. They don't realize that we're being again socially engineered to hold on to the original programming of the nigger programming.
And what's interesting,
our people don't understand how this works.
Right. And what's interesting about that, it became very prominent after the Black Power movement. It was seriously prominent during the so-called Black exploitation films. In fact, there were many titles. There were titles, Nigger Charlie and all this whole kind of stuff.
Yes. That's how they programmed us. People don't realize this. People don't understand because before the late 60s, nigger was considered an offensive terminology. You couldn't say this around your parents. You couldn't say it in your house because that generation during the 60s, they were close. They lived under a time where the word nigger was sometimes all the justification required to lynch us, to kill us, to murder us. They had grandparents who were born in slavery who knew the painful degradation associated with the word nigger. So they knew it. But the white man who controls our image through those movies started putting it in the movies and hiring black actors to call themselves niggers. And all black youths flocked to these movies, and we started using terminology. Yes, niggers, niggers. That's how we call ourselves niggers. And we start using terminology, not understanding how we're being socially engineered to perceive ourselves as niggers.
And he also, when we believe ourselves as niggas, we act like niggas, we dress like niggas. This is why those who wear their pants sagging, it is hard to find a black person who sags who doesn't use the word nigger. Because he sags and he believes that's the way a nigga's supposed to dress. This is a true science. This is a true science. And our people don't understand how the science works. So now, that's why, although in Africa there are literally thousands of dialects and languages that has the meaning for the word king, but the only one going through our community is the word niggas. That's not some coincidence. That's by design. We're being programmed and clinging to the word niggas because niggas has a programming connected to it. Until we understand how the system works, we won't overcome it. It is a fool who thinks it's okay to call seven niggas because N-E-G-U-S. It is a fool who thinks it's okay to call seven niggas N-I-G-G-A. They are ignorant fools. Every single one of them are ignorant fools, but they are ignorant of their own ignorance.
You know, when you said words have meaning, and I've been saying this and will continue to say this, and I've heard others say it, but yet they don't still understand what they really what they're really saying. I remember when Roland Martin was on TV One, News One Now on TV One, and he kept saying words have meaning, but yet he kept calling our people slaves. You see, that's why I don't call our because yes, words do have meaning. That's why I don't call our people black, because we're not black and they're not white. I call it for what it is. And the more that we can learn to do that, then we can purge ourselves of a lot of the ignorance and say it for what it is. But see, I understand the connotations of words. It's just like in this society, they use the word discipline when they really mean punishment. But the word punishment has such a negative connotation to it. So even I just heard it just today when they're talking about the kids. If the kids walk out at 10 o'clock, someone will be disciplined. No, they won't.
Yeah.
They'll be punished. But you use the word discipline when you mean punishment, because what discipline is self-imposed order. That's what discipline is. And when you don't have any order in your life and you out of order, then you get punishment.
Yes.
That's why they build all these damn jails. In prisons across this country, in private prisons, and where a lot of our people are in. That's why I don't use the word black to describe us, because we're not black. We're Africans. Africa is a noun. Black doesn't describe a person, place, or thing. Black is an adjective. Mm-hmm. But a noun describes a person, place, or thing.
I agree with you 150%. Now, I'm going to say this. I use the word black, and there's a reason why I promised I'm using that.
Right. No, no.
I know we're not black. I know we're not black. I know that was the name that came with the foreigners. When the invaders came to Africa, that's when they gave us that definition. I find myself using that because when I say African, I run into those who say, we know damn African. When I say something else, it goes on. If I say melanated people, then there are those who are confused. What do you mean melanated people? So I found that when I navigate, that my safe word was black, because if I have an audience who were from the continent, or an audience who were calling some black Hebrew Israelite, or so on, they would not attack that definition.
Right.
There are those who attack when I say African. There are those who, it goes on and on.
Right.
You know? But I agree with you. We are African people. Yes, we are. I agree 100%.
Well, see, and I agree with you with that, because we understand that we use it interchangeably, you know, but there are those of us, and see, I'm trying to help us understand concretely about what we mean and how we feel, because there are some of us who don't want to be African, but they want to be black. Yeah. They may not want to be white, but they don't understand they're wanting to be black, and they don't want to be African. They want to be black in the context of a system that Caucasians have perpetuated. They want to be black within that system. They want the cars. They want the material trappings. They want the nice job. They want the clothes, the European clothes. They want all of that because they're black.
But you know what, though? This is actually a result of a programming.
Yes.
They were programmed to revile Africa, to hate Africa. You remember when you were a tiny kid, you used to watch the Tarzan movies?
Yes.
The Tarzan movies, you'd be rooting for Tarzan.
Exactly.
And you would say, oh, the villainous Africans, they were portrayed as ignorant, dumb, and you find yourself rooting for Tarzan. No different than when you watch the cowboy movies, and you're rooting for the cowboys over the Native Americans
who were actually the victims and not actually the good guys. But this programming against Africa protects white supremacy, because by programming African Americans to hate Africa, it makes us feel that the white man did us a favor when they enslaved our ancestors and brought us to America. It makes us feel indebted to America. We've been programmed to think in ways that benefits the interests of white society. It also makes us don't pursue reparations, because we believe we are made to see the enslavement of African people as more of a rescue mission that brought us from the backward place of Africa.
Right.
We are
right.
There's an elaborate perception management system that's used to control black people. Until we understand that we are targets and victims of an elaborate perception management system that's used to protect the white supremacy, until we understand that we will overcome what's going on. It is by design that so many African Americans hate Africans.
Right.
By design. Now, I hate saying it because there are millions more of us that love Africans. I don't want those African views watching and get caught in this basic programming. Many of us love our African history and our connections and our lineage. But then there are those who fall victims of this programming. But just like Africans, there are many Africans who see the image of African Americans, and they're afraid of us. They see us as culturally disconnected, but you know, I see in buffoonery, they're thugs.
Right.
Because the white man controls our image, he divides us.
And see, we don't understand that. And because America perpetuates the idea of individualism, I've often said that individualism is a European Caucasian desire. I think, therefore I am, you know, king of the hill, got to be number one, individualism, that rugged individualism, you know, all of that bull. But for Africans, collectivism is a necessity. Is it a need? Is it an imperative? Because we are a collective people. I use this analogy of the Caucasian. He comes to Africa and he says, I have this big basket of goodies and I want to give it to the one who wins this race. You start from here and you go down to that tree, and the first one there, we're going to get the basket of goodies. Well, they all go together. And he says, no. I said, no, I want the first. He said, no, Mbutu. We are together. And if you've seen that poster, that's the one where all the children's feet are in the circle. We are together. In fact, the Boston Celtics used that in 08 when they won the championship in 08 with Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen and Paul Pierce and Rondo. Mbutu, that was their we're together. Because as African people, when we look at Africa and we look at great civilizations particularly, they were together. I often said that the ancient Kemetic society, and I did a piece last week, Friday, right at the end of American African and African History Month, that the ancient Kemetic society was great because of four things: study, communications, cooperation, and organization. Study, they studied everything. In fact, study generated science, and science generated the theology. Study, they communicated effectively. They didn't call each other names. They didn't diss nobody. They communicated. And through that communication, they cooperated with one another, which led upon organization. You could not have built a society that literally has lasted thousands of years. The monuments, the temples, the tombs are all still there. The first great wonder of the world was the pyramids at Giza. But those weren't the first pyramids. There's pyramids down in the northern Sudan that are much older than the pyramids at Giza. It's just that the pyramids at Giza were perfected and built on a monumental scale. They were the first wonders of the world. All the other ancient so-called wonders of the world, they're all gone. The Hanging Gardens of Babylon, the Colossal Rose, all that, Parthenon. But in fact, there's a saying, Brother Frank, that man fears time, and we do. We fear time. But time alone fears the pyramids. When I went to Kemet, and I was going to this light show, that laser light show that they have, you know, for all the tourists and so forth, and has them driving to it as the sun was setting, you can see on the horizon, brother, how perfectly these things were still made, even though when Islam came on the scene, they took the limestone coverings off of the pyramids to make mosques and so forth, to expose the rock, to expose the stone, because now you see the real you know, when you see a picture of them today, you can climb up there. You could, but of course, the police will not let you do that. But I'm saying that you could easily. But at one time, they were smooth covering. So once they made the capstone, they put the limestone as they descended to make a nice smooth. And it can, and you can imagine, brother, that if somebody heard about this and they traveled to ancient Kemet, and then when the sun hit them, I mean, that was bling for real, okay? That was serious bling, because that sun would beam off of that limestone covering and bow and illuminate everything, you know? I mean, you know, we were a great people because of us being collective. And so when we have this individualistic mindset, that's why we can have a situation here in America where 80% of our people are not doing well. 40% aren't doing well at all. And the other 40 are just, you know, getting by. With 20% of our people who are doing well and give less than a damn about the rest of them. Because their mindset, this is America. And America's about getting yours. I got mine. If you didn't get yours, that's your fault. You see? And it's hard for us to come out of that.
Totally agree, my brother. Totally agree.
So we only got about a few more minutes. I really appreciate this conversation. I know that what we talk about on Wednesdays and with my co-host, Brother Franklin Jones, is about the mind and how we're trying our best to put something on the minds of our people to get us to think. And more importantly, because once you think, you behave, your actions are different. And we're trying to get our people to think in a way that we begin to trust one another, respect one another, willing to work with one another, love one another. We're trying to get our men to love and respect our women to love and respect our men, respect our elders, nurture and raise and educate our children. Not, you know, not in the in what's happening here, because you're bombarded 24/7, 365. And I know Brother Frank has told us, and he'll be continue to tell us again, how devious and demonic this system is, particularly as it relates to propaganda, as it relates to what we see, what we read, what we hear. It's in the music. It's in this everything. And it's to our detriment. But yet, you know, we feel that, well, I got my own mind. You know, I can think for myself. No, fool. You know, you're being trained. You know, you're being trained.
Malcolm X said it. Stephen Biko said it. Marcus Garvey said it. Even Dr. King said it. We talked about the psychological warfare against our mind. And until we focus on this, we won't liberate ourselves. We focus on religion. We focus on these things that benefit the white man. We have to focus on, we have to overcome the monopoly our oppressors have over our minds. That's what we have to focus on. And it starts by recognizing it and teaching our people what's being done to our minds. That's how they maintain their dominance over us. Because right now, if we wanted to, before we can address our oppressors, we have to fight through the millions of black people that are programmed to defend them.
Yeah. Whew, deep.
Yeah.
Man. Well, brother.
It's heavy.
Yeah. Well, I, you know, to me, this has become something that, for the African perspectives, myself personally, and for this program, that is necessary, you know. And I appreciate you coming on every Wednesday, that we can have this dialogue. And I hope that our listeners do the same. And I hope that our listeners are imparting this kind of information to their friends and relatives, you know, and family, you know, and also to encourage others to listen as well, you know, because this is what this program is about. This program is about independence, self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty for African people. And the only way that we'll be able to do this is through taking off the shackles off our minds, releasing the vice grip that they have on our minds. I thank you, dear brother. I thank you so much. We end this program like we end all of our programs with the words of Stephen Biko. Stephen Biko said, "The most potent weapon that it is in the hands of the European, the Caucasian, the white man, the oppressor, is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. And not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of us as African people is all the world's resources that everybody thinks they want, can't do without, and don't want to pay for. Dr. John Henry Clark. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Shem Hotep, go in peace. Asante Sana, thank you. Thank you, Brother Frank.
Thank you, my brother, for having me.